In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Shall we take our Bibles and turn now to the book of Romans, and reading in the 12th chapter, verses 1 and 2. And this is a letter that we think Paul wrote to the Christians in Rome. And what Paul is doing here in this letter, basically, is he's thinking through his theology. There are no seminaries, really no professors and PhDs and all of that around. These are ordinary people. And Paul, being the legal-minded type that he was, being converted, if we could say, analogous to lawyers today, that he's thinking through the whole salvation process. He's thinking through just who Jesus was. And he is doing that here in the book of Romans, which becomes a major theological treatise that we have today. So let's read together these first two verses. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. May God bless the reading from his word this morning. I'd just like to share a little bit about my health with you, and I find talking about my health to be embarrassing and boring. So from this day forth and forevermore, we're not going to talk about my health. I know you're concerned about it, and as you know, I haven't been progressing too well, and they had me in therapy, and it just wasn't going very good. And I've been an athlete most of my life, all of my life, and I have worked through a lot of pain before, but this was pain on a scale of 1 to 10 at 11. And so finally this past week I had a CAT scan and MRI, and what I've done, I re-ruptured the disc. And it's probably about 3 or 4 days after I had the surgery, it ruptured again. And I said, I didn't think that was possible. They said, oh yes, it's not rare, it's uncommon, it happens in about 1% of the patients. And that's the reason why that therapy isn't doing you any good. So what we're going to do is we're going to treat it with Bufferin and time and prayer. And then my doctor, we're having some other doctors kind of look at all the findings and see what we're going to go from here. But no more talk of my health. I know you're concerned, but no more talk of that. I will tell you that these 4 months have just caused me to deepen my desire to help people who are suffering. And the other thing is that they have given me great sermon illustrations. And I have one of them for you today. Before I get to that, I want to say that sometimes on Sundays, a lot of times on Sundays, we take on very weighty matters. And there's no way in 20 to 30 minutes that we are going to deal with every aspect of some of the issues that we raise. So what I like to think that we're doing on Sunday, that I do for my life and your life, is that I kind of point us in the right direction. Now, some of us on some days, we get pointed in the wrong direction. And so when you come here on Sunday, I'm trying to help us be pointed in the right direction, as I understand that. And if you're already pointed in the right direction, then I want to give you encouragement for the right direction that you're on. So today's subject is very weighty. And I usually try at the end of the message not only to tell you we've got to do it, but also give you some ideas on how to do it. But today is pretty much you got to do it. And maybe we'll wait for how to do it for another time. But the message came to me by something happened while I was lying on one of those physical therapy tables. And I had the screen pulled around me, and they were doing a test on me. I forget which test they were doing on me, what they were doing, but I could hear the other people in the room. And this other man was being treated by another physical therapist, and apparently she was just getting married. And she told him that. He said, oh yes. He said, I remember you saying that you're just going to get married. He said, when is it? She said, such and such a date. And she said, I went out and I bought a book about the first year of marriage. And he said, oh, throw the book away. Throw the book away, he said. And he was a very animated type of person. He said, no two marriages are alike. Nobody can tell you anything about marriage. Throw the book away, throw the book away. And she said, well, you know, she said, I think that there are some common things that happen in any marriage, and we can kind of learn. Oh, no, he said, throw the book away. He said, I've had a long marriage. I've had three daughters. They're going to get married. And I've told them, I can tell you nothing about marriage. You're going to have to discover it for yourself. You're going to have to get married. Throw the book away. He says, really, don't you believe? No, he said, throw the book away. He says, no sooner do you get married, something is going to happen that you can never anticipate and nobody can tell you about. And she said, well, I don't know. Oh, he says, the first thing is going to happen is that person of yours is going to reach in that trick bag and pull something out. And he said, what do you mean by trick bag? Trick bag. He said, well, he says, my wife pulled a trick out of our trick bag the first week we were married. And she said, well, I don't understand this trick bag and all this stuff. What do you mean? She did something that she never did before the first week we got married. And she said, well, what was it? I said, well, all the time. And I was laughing late on the table. This fellow was so animated in telling the story. He said, all the time we were dating, I never saw her eat anything. I would take her out and I'd, you know, anything you want, and she'd nibble on a French fry. She would nibble on a salad. I mean, we would go to the most expensive restaurant, and I never saw her eat. She never wanted anything, never wanted anything at all. I would buy her a present, and I'd give it to her, a little present. It'd be like a Hope Diamond. It was the most wonderful thing in the world. She was the most, and I won't say no cheap date, she was the most inexpensive date any guy could ever want. You know, he said, this is heaven. You know, we're going to be married, and everything's going to work out. He said, then finally, we got married. And we were a week into our marriage, and I came home expecting to see this very smiling, pretty, newly wed bride, and she was standing at the door, and I walked in, and I said, hi, honey, and she said, give me your paycheck. He said, give me your paycheck? He said, that's right. She said, give me your paycheck. Before you come in this house, I want you to give me that paycheck. He said, where did this come from? This is a woman who never talked about money before, the first week of marriage. Give me the paycheck. And so the woman said, the physical therapist said, yeah, I bet you had a heart-to-heart talk with her. He said, yeah, it was all my heart. And then they laughed, and things started dying down. And I was over on the other side. I thought, you know, what's going on here? What do you think really is happening in this woman's life to have such a change like she did? And then he was kind of reflecting a little bit later, and as soon as he said it, I said, aha, aha. He said, well, you know, to come to find out, I couldn't tell this when we were getting married because her parents were a lot different, apparently, than they were when they were younger, especially father. But come to find out, her father was very irresponsible. And her father was an alcoholic. And if the mother didn't go and get that paycheck immediately, he would go and drink it away. He would go and spend it foolishly, and they would have no food, and they would have no rent money. I thought to myself, aha, aha. Now, my friends, that just started me thinking about so many people that I deal with and also my own personal life. And here we have a woman who was being affected as an adult by what I call destructive influences that happened to her when she was a child. And these destructive influences molded her into thinking that all men could not be trusted, that all men are like her father. And the well-meaning of her family, the well-being of her family was dependent upon her getting that paycheck when her husband came home. And so powerful was this destructive influence in her life that as an intelligent adult, she could not consider and say to herself, my husband is responsible and my husband is not like my father. For her, as a small child, because she had this destructive influence upon her life, she was programmed into thinking that when this occasion comes, this is what I have got to do. Because all men are like my father, and all men cannot be trusted. And when you become married and you are the woman of the household, the most important thing you can do to preserve your survival is to get that paycheck. And as I was sitting there on that therapist table and I was thinking about a lot of you and a lot of me and a lot of other people that I have spoken to and have been a part of their lives, I have thought of how these destructive influences come in many sizes and shapes when I talk with people. Adult and abusive and distant parents, death of someone you're close to when you were a child, accidents. I have talked with individuals who've had accidents when they are small children and it's affected them the rest of their lives. Illnesses and separation problems that they have. Anything which threatens the survival of a child, physically or emotionally, that child will bring that, what happened to them, how that child dealt with it, along with him or her and the personality that they have, programmed into their adulthood to act a certain way when confronted with a certain situation, a certain relationship, or a certain personality, they will automatically do that. And I have talked with people as adults, and they will say, I don't know why I do that. I don't know why I think that. I don't know why immediately when I am confronted with that, I so often become irrational, or I have these deep feelings, or I get depressed, or I get happy, or whatever it is. This woman that was married to this man, and he says they've been happily married for 40-some years, and I believe it. She said, I am married now. Husband brings home paycheck. Get the check. Destructive influences, my friends, as we are children growing up, how important they are in shaping our lives today. This was a long session, so I was thinking all these things when I was on that table. I also got to thinking about the normal, everyday family influences that affect us as children and then affect us as adults. Not only these destructive influences that affect us as an adult, but also these family influences. And when we have couples that come in, we have a battery of tests that couples, questions that couples fill out. And it asks all of these questions, there are almost like 200 of them. And they have to do with areas that if you're having problems in them when you are single and going together, you're going to have major problems in them when you are going to get married. Because a lot of people think that all we have to do is get married and then everything's going to be blissful and everything's going to work. You know, that's the magic when you get married, and it doesn't work that way. How did you solve your problems when you were a child in your family? How did you observe the adults around you solving their problems? Were you from a touchy family? Not a touchy. You know what I mean. A family that touched. Are you from a touchy family? A family who touched or from a family who didn't touch? That's a big factor. Especially with ladies, when they've been from very demonstrative families. And fellas sometimes have a knack of not being very demonstrative. And ladies, and it's also with men. I'm not going to be, you know, say one or the other up here. But it doesn't happen. Then that means you don't love me. No, that's just the way we were. We didn't touch. Okay? Who did the jobs in the family? Who wrote out the bills? Who paid the checks? Who did all of that? Were you a close family? Who handled the money? Who made the decisions in your family? Okay? And all families are different in how they do that. And we are filling our suitcases full of things, my friends, as a child when we come into adulthood. Do you know there is a man who goes around and has made a living trying to find out what we eat at Thanksgiving? You ever hear about this? And depending upon what you fix at Thanksgiving, and what you call your Thanksgiving meal, do you have mashed potatoes or whipped potatoes? Huh? Depending upon what you eat at Thanksgiving, he can tell you almost to the section of the city you came from. Because families do things so many different ways, but they keep passing that on from one generation to another. And we just keep doing it. There's a newlywed. They've been married 1 year, and they're going to fix a ham. True story. They're going to fix a ham for Christmas. And so the husband is watching the wife fix the ham. What does she do? She takes a knife and she cuts the end off both ends of the ham. Big piece of the ham, and she throws it away. And he looks at that and he comes to her and he says, why are you doing that? She says, well, that's the way you cook a ham, isn't it? Isn't that the way you cook a ham? You cut this end off, you cut that end off. That's the way you bake a ham. Why do you bake a ham like that? That's just the way you bake a ham like that. Well, who told you? Mom told me that. Well, let's go talk to your mom. So they went back and talked to mom, and mom says, how do you cook a ham? We cut both ends off the ham, we fix the ham. That's the way we prepare the ham. We've done it all of our lives. Well, why do you do that? Well, the ham just cooks better that way, I guess. Why? You're wasting that much of the ham. Who told you to do that? Grandma taught us to do that. So they go back to grandma, and they said, now, grandma, how do you cook a ham? Well, this is the way I do it. I cut the ends off the ham, I put it in the pan, and they said, well, why do you do that? I said, oh, your grandfather always bought such big hams, I never could fit them in my pan. And so you just keep passing these things on and on and on. And they seem so good at the time, but you go check them out, and hey, you know, there's no really reason for that. And growing up, Paul is saying in the book of Romans that we are being conformed to the patterns of this world. Now, we're not only, he's talking about sin here, we're not only talking about being conformed to the sinful patterns of this world, but we're also being formed to the patterns that well-meaning parents, and now I'm one of those well-meaning parents that my kids are going to talk about when they become well-meaning parents, that we are passing these things on to our children. And we are so affected. When I see an adult, you know what I see? When I try to see an adult, especially an adult that's really acting out, I try to imagine what that adult was like when they were a child. An innocent child, you know, coming into this world with a clean slate. What was written on it? A piece of clay that God gave, and the world kind of molded it. And I believe, my friends, when we find ourselves in trouble, in our own personal lives and in our relationships with others, I think if we are honest, we will agree with the Apostle Paul. He also said this in Romans 7, I do not understand what I do, for what I want to do, I do not, but what I hate, I do. Now, my friends, I am not trying to play Freud today, and I'm not saying we all have to go through psychoanalytical journey here, but what I am saying is that these things, and we should know them, we carry baggage into our adult lives, we carry baggage into our relationships with others, and especially in our marriages. I counted up the other day, and I think I've performed some 300 to 400 weddings in my lifetime. I have been with couples thousands of times, either getting married or coming in and talking with me because they have marriage difficulties. I am a person who is interested in the American family. I am interested in observing the American family. I'm interested in marriages. I'm interested in why some marriages stay together and other marriages fall apart. And I have found basically that there are three categories of marriage. The one category I call the volcanic marriage. This is just waiting for eruption, and everybody's going to be blown to pieces, including the children. And it doesn't take me 5 minutes to sit down. It doesn't take you 5 minutes to sit down and to analyze your own marriage and other people's marriages as a volcanic marriage. It's not going to work. It's also not only for best friend marriages, but also, I believe, for best friend people. Best friend people. Now, when I talk about best friend people, I'm also talking about healthy personalities. You know best friend people, don't you? I mean, when you meet somebody and you look at their lives, sure, they're struggling. Sure, they have their cracks. But it's the kind of person that you would like to like and a person that you would like to have for a best friend. That's the same way with best friend marriages. Sure, they have ups and downs, you know. I don't think there's any of you haven't never had a down in your marriages out there? Let's fess up. I mean, you have ups and downs. I mean, we're people. That's understood. But best friend marriages and best friend people are just kind of healthy relationship. Now, the word for today, let's go to Sesame Street. Our Sesame Street for the word today is metaphora. And that's in the Greek where we get the word metamorphosis, and that's where we get the word transform, and the word today is the word change. That's the word today. The word is change. As our physical bodies are being changed every day, so must our personalities. So must the things we do. So must the way we act. So must the way we think. Paul says that we are to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. That this is also not only for best friend marriages, but also, I believe, for best friend people. Best friend people. Now, when I talk about best friend people, I'm also talking about healthy personalities. You know best friend people, don't you? I mean, when you meet somebody and you look at their lives, sure, they're struggling. Sure, they have their cracks. But it's the kind of person that you would like to like. And a person that you would like to have for a best friend. That's the same way with best friend marriages. Sure, they have ups and downs,
You know, I don't think there's any of you haven't never had a down in your marriage out there. Let's fess up. I mean, you have ups and downs. I mean, we're people. That's understandable. But best friend marriages and best friend people are just kind of healthy relationships. Now, the word for today, let's go to Sesame Street. Our Sesame Street for the word today is metaphora. And that's in the Greek where we get the word metamorphosis, and that's where we get the word transform, and the word today is the word change. That's the word today. The word is change. As our physical bodies are being changed every day, so must our personalities. So must the things we do. So must the way we act. So must the way we think. Paul says that we are to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. I think best friend people and best friend marriage people go through this every day. I think they say these five things every day. Number one, I need to change. Number two, I can change. Number three, I want to change. Number four, I will change. And number five, I believe that change is possible. Now, my friends, I don't care how old you are or how arrived you feel, you need to change. I need to change. You know, if we come to a place where we don't think we need to change anymore, we're in a rut, and a rut is a grave with the sides knocked out of it or the ends knocked out of it. We need to change. But we are filled with notions and cliches that says this isn't possible. You can't teach old dogs new tricks. You can't change the leopard spots. I'm too old to set in my ways to change. Oh, have you ever heard? I start to feel that anymore. I could never do that. I could never be that. This is just who I am. What happens? We come to a place where we begin to lose all hope. We can't believe that there is a power great enough to change ourselves, change someone, or to change our marriages. And you don't know how many times I have looked into the face, into the eyes of a person who is married and having trouble in the marriage and say to me, I have lost all hope. But friends, the unfortunate thing about marriage is to make them work, it takes two. I've seen some single people, I've seen one individual in the marriage try. It's not going to work because the other person is not trying equally as hard. The message today, my friends, is, and the direction I want to point you in today is don't lose hope. Don't lose hope in yourselves, and don't lose hope in your marriage, that there is a power that can change things, and that is the power of God. And we'll finish up here by telling you that they're sending a spaceship to Mars. It's going to land there in about 30 years. And I wish I was about 60 years younger, because I'd love to be on that spaceship. Mars and the Earth were, in God's great wisdom, were evolving at the same rate and speed. And Mars had all the components that the Earth has, and the Earth has all the components that Mars has. Something happened that Mars then became a lifeless, no atmosphere, no water planet. And the Earth went on to thrive and become the Garden of Eden that it is today. Now, the scientists are saying, is there life on Mars? And we say, no, there's no life on Mars. The scientists are now saying, don't be too sure. We believe that that water is down below the permafrost and that the life on Mars is still there. It's not going to talk to us. We find it, but it's still there. How do you know it's still there? A group of scientists go up to Siberia, and they are drilling 165 feet down into the ground. Why Siberia? Because the ground in Siberia has never thawed in millions of years. Down there, 165 feet below the surface, are microorganisms that are millions of years old. They bring them up, and what are they going to try to do? They're going to try to bring them back to life. What do? They put them on a little dish, give them a little heat. Those millions of years of old organisms are now moving around. Isn't that incredible? My friends, if there is hope like that, then there's hope for you and there's hope for me. Give your lives and your marriages to God. Be a best friend person. Be a best friend marriage and help one another. Don't try to adapt Jesus to your lives. Try to adapt your lives to Jesus. Don't bring Jesus into your lives. Bring your life into Jesus. And say every day to God, I need to change. I can change. I want to change. I will change. And I believe there is hope for me and our marriages. I believe change is possible.